This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
Their absence may raise more questions about the legitimacy of the process.
That's VOA's Mohamed Yusuf talking about the lack of election monitors at some of Burundi's polling places. Details next.
Also, the World Health Organization says the outbreak of Ebola in the DRC reaches the city of Mbandaka, raising fears of a wider spread of the deadly virus. And Egypt's army says troops have killed 19 people, it says, were jihadists in the Sinai Peninsula.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Burundians went to the polls today to vote yes or no on proposed changes to the constitution. The changes, among other things, could pave the way for the president to stay in office for another 16 years. For VOA, Mohamed Yusuf reports from Bujumbura.
Voters in Burundi trooped to polling centers to cast their ballot in Thursday's referendum. In the voting booth, they faced one basic question: do you accept or reject the proposed changes to the 2005 constitution? The proposals include extending the presidential mandate from 5 to 7 years, creation of a prime minister post, and giving the ruling party the power to fire an elected lawmaker found to be breaking the law and constitution. If adopted, the changes will give current President Pierre Nkurunziza a chance to run for another 2 terms. Nkurunziza has ruled Burundi since 2005. Businesswoman Muamini Mosi lives in Bujumbura. It is important to change the constitution because there are some laws that are good, others not. But we need to change it as Burundians. I voted yes. We want change, and we want to see change better than the one we have. Burundi has been rocked by political violence since Nkurunziza ran for a third term in 2015. Defying critics who said he was violating the constitution and the Arusha Agreement that ended the country's civil war. Due to the 2015 controversy, the government says there is need to change the constitution to provide a clear direction on the term limit issue. One person who voted no on the changes told VOA the country needs to stick with the constitution as it is. I don't know what they have written, what they have changed. I am forced to vote no because I believe previous constitution and the Arusha Agreement has helped us with the peace we enjoy today. I voted no in the hope we can remain with the old constitution. Mechanic Minarikiza Shindano says today's vote is more of a survival for him. I am voting for my safety and security. As a citizen, we want development. We do not want violence. We want to do our work peacefully. Human rights organizations had called for postponing the referendum, citing threats to civilians from the youth wing of the ruling party, the Imbonerakure. The vote proceeded without much trouble in most parts of the country, but some polling stations visited by VOA lacked election monitors. Their absence may raise more questions about the legitimacy of the process. The Electoral Commission has until Saturday to announce the result of Thursday's vote. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Bujumbura.
Mental illnesses are the most common health conditions around the world. In Liberia, people of all ages suffer from various forms of mental illnesses, mostly stemming from years of conflict and the devastating impact of the Ebola crisis, which left many children without parents and millions of people traumatized. In part 4 of our series from Liberia on mental health, I visited a clinic in Monserrato County where the Carter Center Mental Health Program is helping patients improve their lives. For mental health clinician and officer in charge, Fred G. San, a typical day at the Mount Barclay Clinic in Montserrato County, Liberia, involves treating hundreds of patients suffering from physical ailments to people with mental illnesses. With the support from the Atlanta-based Carter Center, the clinic can now offer services to help people who are suffering from mental illness. San has received mental health training that will help him identify and treat people.
We treat people with depression, people with epilepsy, people with psychosis. Those are the people we treat in other cases that come.
Determining what type of mental illness a patient is suffering from and having an adequate supply of drugs on hand to treat that patient are two major challenges the clinic faces on a daily basis.
Sometimes the patient, they come, some of them, they are not able to explain their conditions, and sometimes the relatives leave them alone to come by themselves. And then when they come, we find it difficult to get information from them. And even to get them to come for their medications, it becomes very difficult. And some of the challenges is sometimes drug shortage, where patients will come, walk a long distance, over 2 hours. At the end of the day, they don't get drugs. They feel discouraged, they go back, their conditions start to worsen. And to get them to come back again, it can be very difficult.
San, who is also the only mental health clinician at this clinic, pointed out another problem for patients is that many don't have the money to purchase the prescriptions.
Because mental health medications are very expensive, and some of these people, they don't afford. So if they can't afford, then they go home, carry the prescription, and sit down home. Say the day medicine will come, I will go. And within that time, some of them start re-experiencing the same condition again, become worse.
Serafina Borbor is a community health volunteer for the Barclay Medical Center. Serafina has also been trained by the Carter Center Mental Health Program. Her role is critical to establishing trust between the patient and the mental health care provider.
I go out in the community, the various schools, police station, because when I went for the training, they told us to go in the community, educate the people. Because mental condition, people believe it is a wish, curse, all out of belief. So you have to make the people understand that this condition is not about wish, it's not about traditional curse. So we do the education. Sometimes they hide ourselves because of shame and stigma. So we go in the community. It's a tedious way because you have to move from house to house. They ask, are you willing to go to the hospital? If they agree, I take them to the hospital and bring them.
Borbor said it could take months to build trust and confidence. It is a task that requires patience, but she says she's up for the challenge. You see, Borbor knows firsthand of the challenges when dealing with people with mental illnesses. She lost her mother due to mental illness and has made it her life's goal to make sure people get the help they need.
I don't want them to lose their life like the way I lost my mother, so I want them to be alive, so at least when I see them, then I feel proud.
Montserrato County has the largest concentration of Carter Center-trained clinicians, so far 81, serving a population of more than 1 million people. And for the clinicians and volunteers such as Serafina, they are proud to be able to help those in their community get the proper mental health care they need. Kim Lewis, VOA News, Montserrato County, Liberia.
Egypt's army says troops have killed 19 people who were jihadists over the past few days in the Sinai Peninsula. The deaths occurred during what the army calls a large anti-terror operation that was launched in February. Based on a series of military statements, news services have calculated that the effort has left 200 to 300 dead, including more than 30 military personnel. President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi promised last month that the operation would be finished as soon as possible. He has vowed to wipe out terrorists and restore security to the country.
Political parties in Zimbabwe rarely get along, and their interactions in the past have been marred with violence. However, youthful political leaders from various parties are joining hands and taking a stand against political violence in the country and other issues affecting youth. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinavashi reports.
Lavmo Chinoputsa, the youth secretary general of the Movement for Democratic Change, said Wednesday the young politicians have a common goal.
We are representatives of the different political parties, youth wings, that have started a new trajectory in the politics of this country by coming together to work towards ensuring that as young people we push for a fair electoral field, we push for the participation of young people, and we make sure that our young people are desist from all forms of violence.
Chinoputsa told journalists that younger members of the ruling ZANU-PF and the opposition parties, the MDC, the MDCT, ZAPU, TZ and NPP, all met last month to set out a common agenda for freedom, justice and equality. From that meeting, he says they discovered there is more that unites them than divides them in addressing the needs of younger Zimbabweans. While organizers from Wednesday's news conference said youths from the ruling ZANU-PF support their call for peace, no ZANU-PF members were present. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament business and other political events. While he says it's a good thing to have the youth leaders finding common ground, he has low expectations.
It's commendable that the young people can come out and say such things in public. On paper, all these things look amazing when we're at press conferences and the rhetoric is being highlighted. But the sheer absence of ZANU-PF is testament that there are other leaders high up the rank who will be pulling strings in practical terms. These young people act in accordance to their leaders' voice and actions.
Chinoputsa says the youth group is inclusive and other political parties are welcome to join the push towards its goals. Zimbabwe is expected to hold national elections in the next few months, and more than 100 political parties have expressed interest to taking part. As much as 75% of Zimbabwe's population is under the age of 35. Many younger Zimbabweans have long complained that the government ignores their needs, including job creation and educational opportunities. And at times, leaders from different parties have encouraged younger members to use violence to suppress voters from other parties. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
17 past the hour, you are listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The World Health Organization says the outbreak of Ebola in the Democratic Republic of Congo has reached a city, raising fears of a wider spread of the deadly virus. The new case was confirmed in Mbandaka, a city of more than 1 million people in the northwestern province of Equateur. Mbandaka is about 150 kilometers from the rural area of Bikoro, where the outbreak was detected early this month. The WHO has called a meeting of its emergency committee for tomorrow in Geneva to bring together experts to discuss plans for containing the outbreak. There have been more than 40 confirmed or suspected cases of the Ebola outbreak, with about 23 deaths. The agency says it is deploying about 30 experts to conduct surveillance in the city. An initial batch of 4,000 experimental Ebola vaccines have arrived in the country. Healthcare workers, including WHO staff, will be among those who receive the vaccine first. In addition, relatives and contacts of suspected cases will be vaccinated.
Using toilets without water and human waste as compost were seen as the territory of radical environmentalists until recently in South Africa. But given intense water restrictions in the drought-plagued city of Cape Town, many people are changing their attitudes toward this unconventional water-saving measure. Darren Taylor reports.
It's an overcast morning in the coastal village of Komiki near Cape Town. Framed by a churning black-grey sea on the horizon, three men are unpacking bags of compost from a truck. Among them is Londoner Peter Staley, who decided 20 years ago it was time for a change after a long career as a weapons engineer for the British Royal Navy.
hit 40 and retired from the Navy. Midlife crisis happened and decided to get on with what I really wanted to do. I've got an engineering degree, but it wasn't really my passion. So now I'm working with my hands outside in the garden, doing what I really love and hopefully saving the world at the same time.
Staley's at a school to set up a permaculture market garden to grow food without chemicals. He sees the use of humanure as reinserting the human species back into nature.
Human feces and human urine are perfectly good organic material. Lots of people are fecophobic, but there's no real reason to be. If it's composted properly, it's fine. If you're eating a really rich mineral diet, then you're feeding your plants with a really rich mineral diet. And this is where we're talking about the circle now. As you eat it, you put it on your garden, you eat it again. We are what we eat.
Staley's on a unique mission to rid as many Cape Town homes as possible of traditional water flush toilets at a savings of 9 to 22 litres of water per flush. His version of a waterless toilet consists of little more than a few panels of wood and a plastic seat on top.
You've got a box or a hole in the top that you put a bucket under. Obviously, there's a lid to close it down, stop flies getting in there. You do your business, you cover it with sawdust. Once the bin's full, you take it out and put it into a compost heap.
The human waste is covered with other organic material, such as dried grass or sawdust. The compost heap is surrounded by wooden pallets insulated with straw, mainly to soak up urine, but also to generate heat to kill pathogens and prevent health hazards. For safe results, Staley advises people to wait a year to use the compost.
If you're really fecophobic and really scared of your own poo, then leave it 2 years. You know, there's nothing going to be dangerous in there after that amount of time.
The drought and resulting severe water restrictions mean Capetonians are trying to conserve water like never before. So Staley offers courses on setting up a waterless toilet and composting safely. He can't keep up with demand.
I've got two in my house and they're both in current bathrooms and the crapper toilet just doesn't get used.
City authorities aren't as enthusiastic as Staley. He says he understands because if masses of people in high density areas start trying to compost with human waste, it'll create a health catastrophe. But he adds people with the necessary knowledge and space should do so as soon as possible. Staley says there's enough humanure to fertilise all the small farms the world needs to feed itself.
7.5 billion people make an awful big pile of compost. And that could all be turned straight back into our fields to give us our resource.
He says nature is telling us that we're abusing it, and measures such as composting toilets, as unappealing as they may be for many people, must be taken to ensure humanity's survival. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Cape Town.
Officials say unidentified gunmen ambushed the Ethiopia country manager of Dangote Industries, Africa's largest cement producer, as he was returning from a company factory in the restive Oromoya region. Deep Kamra, a native of India, was shot dead yesterday, along with his Ethiopian driver and secretary. The company says death threats have been made against its head of transportation in Ethiopia and its human resources chief. The motive for the attack wasn't immediately clear, and the attackers are still at large. The Oromoya region has been rife with violence linked to youth anger over economic and political marginalization. The factory has been the target of unrest since it's opened in 2015, with demonstrators demanding more jobs. It also has been criticized for how it sources raw materials. Dangote is owned by Nigerian billionaire Aliko Dangote, Africa's richest man. The company has cement factories in 10 countries.
With the horrors of war continuing for 4 long years, South Sudanese have had precious little to laugh about. But one activist in Juba is using comedy to try to make people temporarily forget the pain and suffering of war. Maddie Angor says he believes bringing people together from different political and ethnic backgrounds helps create cohesion when people can laugh a little and forget about their differences. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Remember, the special toilets are meant for the visitors. The villagers, you can go to the bush.
Hundreds of people, including ordinary citizens and top government officials, laughed at Eric Omondi's joke about the disparities between rural and urban life. He is considered by some as one of Kenya's standout comedians and entertained South Sudanese at Juba's Nyakuron Cultural Center this past weekend. Activist Madengor's Dolko Media organizes the show dubbed Junub Comedy for Peace. Ngoro believes comedy shows like this are a good peace-building tool that can lead to mending differences between communities torn apart by conflict.
This is a nation that is not coming together. So what is that thing that can bring everyone together? And we believe it is comedy. People with religious, political differences, they come together and they laugh together. And in the process, we build confidence.
But not everyone thinks Madengor is funny. A UN panel of experts report released in November 2015 identified Madengor Akech Kwai, a Canadian citizen who was then working as a journalist, as among key pro-government elements who consistently use social media to agitate against the international presence in South Sudan. The report names Ngor as among the most prominent figures who consistently use their social media accounts to propagate inflammatory statements against the United Nations. Ngor denies this accusation. Another activist, Peter Beer, heads the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum, which co-sponsored the comedy show. He agrees with Ngor.
South Sudanese need to restore the national fabric, social fabric. Because we have gone to the extent where the war has divided us and has killed us and that we have hated ourselves. And to a certain extent, sometimes we feel like we hate the country itself.
Juba resident Dengai Gadluak attended the comedy show. He too believes South Sudanese communities polarized by the conflict can be influenced by comedy.
You know, when people come together and people laugh together, it's actually a way of actually bringing peace together, bringing peace among the young people. You know, South Sudanese at the moment, they are actually divided. When people come up with initiatives like this and you invite international comedians, it's actually one of the ways that brings South Sudanese together, especially the youth.
The show's themes centered on tribalism, chauvinism, culture, and modernity.
By the time the bride gets here, the makeup is gone. All the makeup is... The pastor is asking, do you take her to be your wife? Or... The pastor is asking the bride, you take him to be your husband. Yeah. All the woman can say is, water.
Omondi jokes about how couples in Africa conduct themselves during wedding ceremonies in comparison to the West. Omondi says comedy has the strength to unite divided societies.
The biggest tool to cohesion and unity and togetherness is that spirit of laughter, is that joy. Because humans are structured in a way that even in a family setting, when people are laughing, people are happy. And that's the moment that there's that spirit of unity. It is natural, yeah? Because you forget your differences.
Ben Gideon, a commissioner at the South Sudan Human Rights Commission, who attended the show, says he too believes comedy can be therapy for South Sudanese.
Comedian shows like this are healing exercise that contribute to the national healing and reconciliation process. And South Sudan is undergoing at the national healing and reconciliation process, and that's why it is important that top comedian like Eric Omondi is to be brought so that people can talk.
Wake Simon Odo, VOA News, Juba.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Xiaogan Chang, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minutes newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Okay.